All right. Well, hello, Michael. I was hoping you could share with me and my readers just a little bit of where you think the crisis in Honduras is and what your reading is of the status quo now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to do so, and I should preface this with a little bit about myself for anybody that probably most likely never heard of me, and I'm not sure they have any reason to. I have worked with Inter-American Dialogue for about 3 years, and I work on the education program exclusively, but have traveled about 7 times to Honduras over the past 3 years, worked very closely with a number of national counterparts that down there, and have sort of been drawn into this ongoing and now explosive political crisis. And it's from that vantage point that I have anything to say. Of course, I also blog and I read a lot, so I know what we can read on the internet as well. So that's where I get my information. Kiko, what can I tell you? Where to even begin? What we've seen over the past, what, 3 plus weeks now has been surreal. I mean, it's really, I don't think anybody, if you asked me or probably anybody else that follows the region 4 weeks ago, well, let's say five, what country in the hemisphere will be suffering a long-standing political crisis and after the deposal of its president by the military, Honduras would not have been anywhere close to the top of the list. And yet here's where we are. So from that point, it's also kind of comical to watch the amount of hot air being blown out there about what's going to happen, what the real underlying issue is, who the real bad guy is, et cetera. So I suppose I'm saying all this, Kiko, just to throw the requisite grain of salt into the mix because I've got no more real information than anybody else out there does because it's just so up in the air.
Sure, but maybe you can help us just put things in a little bit of context because there's this kind of image that we have that we get about the Honduran elite as kind of the it's kind of a caricature saying of like really the old landowning white families and it's very small and this is the story we hear about Venezuela too, but never having been to Honduras, I have a sense that it's a lot more true in Honduras. It's a much smaller country with what seems from an outsider's perspective to be a lot less social mobility and a lot more of a kind of close but also cohesive elite. So I guess my question is, how to what extent do you think that's a real characterization of the Honduran elite, and to what point do you think that elite is cracking or likely to crack or is consolidated around a vision of what they need to do?
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting question, and I think it's actually a pretty important question. You don't hear or see a lot about that in at least in the international and certainly not in the national media in Honduras. I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, what my thoughts that are coming to me is Honduras is a small country, right? There's people that say it's run by six families essentially, and that may not be that far from the truth. I can't verify that, but it's a country of, what I don't even remember the latest population figure, 7, 8 million people.
Oh no. Oh, okay, sorry. You have to repeat that because you cut out completely.
Oh, we lost. You lost me. Where do I need to repeat? Where do I need to?
From it's a country of 7 or 8 million people.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't think I got too far after that. Yeah. Like I'm saying, it's a small country. Everybody knows everybody. There's a, it's not at all an exaggeration to say that the country is essentially and has long been run by elites. Now, at the same time, to characterize those quote-unquote elites as sort of callous, landowning. I mean, they probably are landowning, but callous, disconnected, unconcerned profiteers, captains of industry. You know, I don't think that's necessarily a fair characterization in this day and age. And I, you know, and again, I base that comment based on my own experience. I work with groups of individuals and organizations that are part of this elite, but I can personally vouch for them insofar as their devoted interest in equalizing what is essentially one of the most unequal countries in the hemisphere. Is it a front? Is it all posture? I don't think so. You know, one could make an argument that it is, but I think that there's a lot more subtlety and nuance in the Honduran elite than is probably going to be given credit under the circumstances we're seeing now. It's very easy, I think, to paint them as, you know, out for their own interest and ultimately, you know, gonna be interested in a power grab, so to speak, like the one that we're seeing right now. But I don't think Micheletti, for example, who's sort of become the face of that group, I don't think he's a very good representative. And I don't think if you speak to the powerful, the political class, the elite in Honduras, that they would be very pleased with that, with him being the symbol of that group. And I don't think we'll see his face on the scene for much longer either. I mean, this is the guy that has this guy's failed presidential campaigns several times over, and I think in Honduras, you know, he became the president by sort of a situation of last resorts. I don't think anybody really wanted him to become president, and I don't think anybody really wanted him being the portavoz of the new interim government, but that's the situation that we're in.
How do you think 5 weeks ago, how was he seen?
Micheletti, I mean, here's a guy that had lost the campaign to for the presidency. There was, I don't know if you remember the whole scandal, and in fact, at this point, it's almost blurry in my mind. This was one of the biggest political scandals in Honduras to the date for last year. The primary for the Liberal Party pitted Micheletti and Santos as Elvin Santos as two of the leading candidates, and Santos, who was then vice president to Manuel Zelaya, was deemed ineligible, even though he was way far ahead in the polls, because he had actually served as interim president for like a day or 2 days when Zelaya was incapacitated at some level. It was one of these bizarre circumstances. So Micheletti became the de facto Liberal Party candidate
He seems to have a knack for the de facto thing.
It's really ironic, isn't it? And he was reviled, and people were really upset, and eventually it got overturned, and Santos became the candidate. I mean, Micheletti is not a popular guy. He's considered a very stubborn guy. He's been around forever. He's like a career, you know, politician. I'm trying to think. I wouldn't be able to tell you who in Venezuela he would be, but you know, I don't know. In the U.S., I'm thinking like, now I want to say McCain until he became the Republican
Right,
nominee. Because for years, and no one ever thought he'd be viable.
But I guess the question now is, to what degree is the kind of political class that's represented in Congress and in the courts and the kind of institutional Honduras holding together in the face of like really extraordinary pressure?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know I simply don't know the answer to that one. That's a tough one. I wish I did. I haven't been down there since the crisis, and I don't, you know, I talk to people and I get sort of, you know, bits and pieces of information, but everybody, there's, you know, doesn't seem to me like there's a real cohesiveness on what's going on. I mean, every day is a new day and everything's in flux. And every time I hear a description about what people are feeling or doing, it's kind of like the blind man feeling the elephant and describing what they feel. So I wish I could give you more information on that, but it's not clear to me. I think that's something that's worth keeping an eye on.
Right. Because the other thing that we're hearing a lot about now in Venezuela, you know, it's been a very strange thing because none of us knew anything about Honduras until very, very recently. And I don't think, you know, even the government was very much centered on Honduras until the crisis happened. And then, you know, Chavez has a little bit of an obsessive personality. And this is, well, it was very clear that he's more or less cleared his schedule for 3 weeks now and dealt with nothing else. Well, that may be changing a little bit now. He's talked a little bit about Colombia and a couple of other issues, but there's still a huge amount of focus on this.
Yeah.
Today, Micheletti threw out the Venezuelan delegation from Honduras, and the Venezuelan said that they wouldn't leave because they didn't recognize the government. I don't understand that at all. If they don't recognize the government, it's not clear to me what they're doing there in the first place, because who are they representing Venezuela's interests to if they don't recognize the government? But
yeah.
I guess it doesn't really work that way because it just becomes a big symbolic, like, this is our territory, we're going to stay here. And we're not going to pay attention to me. But I guess the point of this little diatribe of mine is to say that there's so much tension now. And it's so clear that Chavez is so heavily invested in this. And we're really wondering, you know, if Chavez, Daniel Ortega, and Zelaya decide that they want a shooting war over this, can they get it? You know? And I don't know how that thought even strikes you. It's not a thought that I had ever entertained before the
last
2 weeks.
Not one I had entertained either. Yeah, but you know, I think the fact that Arias brought this up of all people, you know, he was the first one, at least on the international stage, to bring up the possibility of a civil war in Honduras, which, I mean, almost inevitably would involve, if not militarily, rhetorically and ideologically, Nicaragua and Venezuela.
But come on, I mean, it's just simply not true that it would involve Nicaragua and Venezuela. It can only happen with Nicaragua and Venezuela's help.
Because Zelaya
doesn't have an army, you know what I mean?
Right. No, I mean, I don't know that to be the I don't know that the forces that are being mobilized in Honduras don't have the wherewithal themselves, but you're absolutely right. I mean, it's hard to imagine that, you know, whether it's the cart or the horse, Nicaragua and Venezuela will be there, you know, ready to go.
Go ahead.
Yep.
Well, I'm just saying that in that kind of atmosphere, you see Micheletti kind of drawing a line in the sand and throwing out Venezuela and the Venezuelan diplomatic delegation, and it just seems like the kind of thing that can just very clearly escalate, and it really made me worried because it gave me a very strong sense that this man doesn't know what he's doing.
That's right. No, I think there's a growing sense that Micheletti is quickly becoming a liability to Honduras' cause at this point, and certainly for the interim government's chance at getting resolution in any kind of way that they would want it. It's hard to imagine that, despite their posture, it's hard to imagine that they actually want to just be left alone by the entire world with what that implies, and not only that, but then be left to their own devices to fend for themselves against these forces that may or may not be mobilizing against them nationally and regionally. So, you know, Micheletti, as I said, the sense and you know, the sense about him from all the people I've spoken with is that he's, you know, he's a stubborn guy, and he's, you know, a colleague of mine at the Dialogue actually pointed out that Micheletti he's never been on the international stage like this. He's never been in a situation before where we had to sort of think about negotiating. He's just kind of a hardliner. He had long involved in business. I mean, he's a guy that gets what he wants and is used to sort of getting what he wants, putting his fist down and being stubborn. That's not working here, and I don't think he knows another way to do it. I think it's probably a matter of time before he is either voluntarily steps down or is asked himself to resign by the interim government, because he's not helping out at this point.
All right. Listen, I don't want this to get too long because I am, as you may have noticed, writing 100 posts this week, and they've
Yeah,
won some of them.
you got a lot of posts to get on top of.
Yeah, no joke.
This only counts as a half a post, I think, too.
No, I'm gonna look at some way to splice the audio into like four or five posts because I have to milk it. Come on. But listen, I think this is great. I'm going to keep bothering you, as the crisis inevitably gets weirder, which it will, and maybe we can keep sharing.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would love to do that. I think I mentioned to you that I contribute to the Latin Americanist, and I'm embarrassed I can't remember the actual URL. It's like Our Latin America Blogspot, something like that. But I wrote today a bit about just a little bit about the Nicaragua situation that's brewing, and that's I think very quickly, Kiko, that's going to become conflated with the one in Honduras. Two different situations, but they're neighbors. Very similar sort of strategies being employed. Though I think we'll have more to talk about soon.
Great. Well, I look forward to that.
All right, and I look forward to keeping up on the Caracas Chronicles now. It's on my list.
Great fun. Ciao, Michael.
Bye bye.